All right. Well, thank you for joining us for the inaugural podcast. This is not the jQuery podcast, but instead this is the...
Yay Query
podcast. So we just basically wanted to have a very casual conversation about what's going on in the jQuery and front-end development community. Kind of talk about what's going on and kind of what our take is on it. So we'll start off with some short introductions. My name is Paul Irish, and I'm a front-end developer in Boston. I maintain a blog at paulirish.com, and I'm currently looking into web fonts and also performance techniques using jQuery. And Rebecca, why don't you go ahead?
Hey, I'm Rebecca. I'm a front-end architecture consultant down in Durham, North Carolina. And my big focus is on best practices and code organization, so you'll hear me talking a bit a lot about that.
I'm Alex Sexton. I am a developer here in Austin, Texas, and I generally just do regular, straight-up front-end development. I have been focusing on mobile web recently, so I could give some insight on that as well.
I'm Adam Sontag. I work here in New York City doing front end, and I'm currently mired in some back end stuff. But I'm known throughout the internets as AJ Piano, and that is what very you'll be able to find me as that on the jQuery IRC channel on Freenode. The four of us are all regulars in the jQuery channel. Paul Irish is Paul Irish. Rebecca is R. Murphy. Alex is Slex Axton. And if you have comments about the show or anything like that, or want to talk about jQuery, you can find us there.
Yeah, so a lot of what we're discussing comes from both things we've seen and kind of the support that we give on the IRC channel. We deal with a lot of people doing active jQuery development on a day-to-day basis, so hopefully we can bring some of the insight of what we learn from all that to you. So why don't we start off, I want to talk about kind of like what's going on recently, a jQuery library that got released just recently was called underscore.js. So underscore.js was put out, I think it was a week or so ago, and it was positioned as the tie to go with along with jQuery's tux. And so it has a few functions that that are all sitting on the the underscore character itself, and they do. They do quite a bit of stuff. So, Adam, do you want to talk about kind of what the aim of the project is?
Well, yeah. Much like you don't really need to be wearing a tuxedo to make a tie look good. You can look at Paul for evidence of that, in fact. You don't need jQuery to make good use of underscore.js. According to the website, Underscore is a utility-built library for JavaScript that provides functional programming support to the expected prototype of Ruby, but basically it's a bunch of really nifty array functions mixed in with some templating that is going to make your life a lot easier when it comes to putting cross-browser JavaScript.
Yeah, but it really, you have to be accustomed to this style of programming for this to make sense. I mean, there's definitely valuable, useful things here, but it's hard to say whether your average jQuery user would make use of this. This may be somebody who's coming from a functional programming background and misses these things from jQuery.
I think that a lot of people who are akin to prototype style could really get a lot from underscore as far as what they're missing from prototype to jQuery. Prototype focuses a lot on adding functionality to the base prototypes of arrays and strings and collections and functions and stuff like that. So here you have a lot of those same functions that are implemented in prototype, but they don't ruin the global namespace which is, of course, verboten, as we all know. As well as the library actually upgrading to, or not necessarily upgrading, but it uses JavaScript 1.6 if your browser has that available. Soon, most browsers should have JavaScript 1.6 as a version of JavaScript running, and a lot of these functions that underscore is adding will no longer use the underscore version, but use the native JavaScript version, which is the way to do it as far as things go.
Right. It'll be quite a bit faster to use the native methods when it's available.
Much like Sizzle and Query Selector All are kind of used whenever Query Selector All is available or not.
Right. So it has a couple of things, and there's some duplication from like the isArray, isFunction stuff that's basically lifted from jQuery. But it also has the template functionality within it is essentially a lift of John Resig's micro templating function. I've used that quite a bit and can definitely vouch for its usefulness. It's a tiny piece of code, and it's certainly really just like templates exactly how you would need
it. Yeah, templates are such a useful thing when you're pulling in like JSON data from Ajax, and then you need to be able to put it into something. Instead of having the template in your JavaScript, you can actually define the template as quasi-HTML.
Right. I think a lot of things that we see in the jQuery IRC are people who have tons and tons of HTML saved into strings. And
right.
I would always recommend that someone uses something like the micro templating engine in, whether it's the pure one from Resig or whether it's this one inside underscore, instead of doing a ton of strings with HTML in it.
Right. Yeah, definitely. So I want to kind of shift, not talk about something that's new, but something that's actually kind of old, and that is Thickbox. So Thickbox, as we know and love oh so dearly, was a plugin that was written by Cody Lindley, released somewhere around early 2007, I think, maybe?
That was the last time it was supported, when it was released.
Right. It's old, basically.
Yeah.
And I think we've all kind of used it, and it has a lot of functionality of, like, you can load a different page, and it puts in an iframe, load in a, like, flash thing, and it does a gallery and all this shit. It does that, but it uses a very old, it doesn't really follow the jQuery plugin API technique of how things work. So like, let's say that you add additional elements to the DOM, it's not going to be very trivial to kind of like thickboxify those things.
I think like Thickbox is so old that it was written back before the rules of writing jQuery plugins were even codified. Had really good intentions back when it was written, but for us to support it now, and we get so many questions about it in the IRC channel, it's really painful to support just because it doesn't follow these conventions that have been established in the years since it was written. And there are a lot of good options. If you need the Thickbox, the services that Thickbox provides, then there are a lot of good options. Paul, you were talking about, well, we all have used the jQuery UI modal. You were talking about FancyBox and ColorBox, and maybe you can talk about ColorBox a little bit more.
Yeah, so ColorBox is, ColorBox has, if you're very familiar with Thickbox, ColorBox basically offers the same functionality of, like, you can throw it a SWIFT and it'll display it as you want, or throw it a gallery of images, or some external page reference and it'll throw it into an iframe. So it's very kind of like easy, whereas jQuery UI, the jQuery UI dialog, you actually have to construct your own iframe and pass something into it. But at the same time, the jQuery UI dialog is really, really well tested, is totally themable, and has a lot of power behind it. So it's a very extensible and flexible solution.
One reason, why we're sort of advocating the very fact that this happened is that when you're, if you are coming to say the jQuery channel or any real, any open source support channel, if you show up and you're supporting some plugin that hasn't been updated in more than 2 years, people don't really want to help you that much. Because, unfortunately, you know, time has passed Thickbox by, and
what I think
a lot of the...
I think the thing is that just there are better options out there. You know, you search for Thickbox, and you find Thickbox, but if you open your mind to what it is you actually need, which is some sort of modal windowing solution or some sort of solution for loading content into a pop-up or whatever it is that you need, you know, there are a lot of better options out there. And you'll find people way more eager to help you out with them if you can explore those a little bit. So, yeah.
One thing that was popular...
No, go ahead. It's all you.
Okay.
All you. Sorry.
I can't get my fingers straight. There's a UI library, interface.js, that was super popular when jQuery 1.1 was out, and it had draggables, and it had a fishbowl dock effect, and my god.
That was sweet.
It was so awesome. But guess what? It, totally doesn't work anymore. So when we encounter someone who's like, hey, I would like to use the interface draggable effect as found at interface.icon.ro, we're just going to be like, it just
no
can't
one
be done anymore.
Can't help you anymore.
Worth mentioning, though, the interface guy made a sweet color fix. So, you know, all's not lost.
The other thing I just want to mention, too, that, I mean, when I have needed a modal dialogue solution, then I'll often just write my own, because a lot of the, and Paul's going to put on his sad face now, but a lot of times these robust solutions like Simple Modal or Fancy Box or Color Box or whatever, they have way more functionality than you actually need. And to write the basic functionality that you need, you can do it in 20 lines or so, and with a little bit of supporting CSS. So that's worth evaluating too, I think. And you know, other people will disagree. Other people will say, use what's already written, and now it's their turn.
Right. To shed some light on what you say, I think Paul's not an advocate of necessarily writing your own, but do realize that a thick box, a modal window, is just an absolutely positioned div that it has a higher z-index than everything else. If you want the shadow behind it, you have a full screen, absolutely positioned div on top of everything else. There's nothing special. It's not something terribly confusing. Yeah, it's just put a div in the middle of the screen and put it on top of the other ones. That's all it is. So don't be afraid of modals as if they are the same thing as like an alert box in native JS that you couldn't implement yourself.
Right. So I wanted to kind of bring up mobile and kind of how jQuery works or doesn't work in mobile. So I know that both you, Alex, and Rebecca have kind of dug into this, and I wanted to kind of get your take. Like, do you think, first of all, I know that the jQuery project has announced that they're looking to create a mobile-specific build of the library, and what kind of like things have you seen as far as how the library stands now? Is it appropriate to be using on like a mobile WebKit platform? And do we only have to consider WebKit, or like how do you guys see that, Alex?
Just real fast, I guess. jQuery works on mobile WebKit. It's fairly compatible. There's a lot of events that don't really translate, and you can read a lot on that. I won't go into great detail, but you know, there's touch move and touch start, all these touch events that are new to touch devices that jQuery doesn't necessarily handle, but has custom events so you can easily kind of push them in there. But the problem with jQuery is that there's a lot of code in there that really isn't applicable to the mobile world, right? It's this library that's built for desktop browsers, and it was considered big, you know, back in the day when we didn't have as fast bandwidth. So now that we're back to low bandwidth, tiny machines, I think that there could be a real use for a mobile jQuery version that splits off just the necessities. Because jQuery, for one, on iPhone, breaks the cache limit. So you can't cache anything as large as jQuery. And so each request that you make on a page is going to require a new download of jQuery and then running, which is kind of terrible, in my opinion. But
I think that you have to weigh the cost and the benefit. I think that the thing that a lot of people who are doing mobile development don't realize, they aren't aware of that caching limit, and so they just drop jQuery into it and don't realize the consequences of that. So the iPhone caching limit is 25K, and the really crappy thing about that is it's 25K after the content is unzipped. It's only minified, the minified code that counts towards that 25K. So you hit that so fast, and jQuery is what, like 56K minified? It's 26K or something like that, gzipped. It's tiny gzipped, but it's not small enough to make it under the iPhone's cache limit. So you run if you introduce jQuery into a mobile site, you're going to have to be hitting that 56K file every single time, and there's going to be a cost associated with that, because 3G and, God forbid, Edge are friggin' slow. So, anyway, it's not necessarily like, don't ever use jQuery on a mobile site. It's just be really aware before you make the decision to use it of the cost that you're imposing on yourself.
Right, JQ Touch is a very popular jQuery iPhone library. Great. I think if you are a jQuery programmer, you need to make a quick mobile site, there is no better solution than JQ Touch. But it does use jQuery, so I think that you have to be careful in using it. However, if you're using JQ Touch exactly kind of how it was intended, you really probably don't have more than a single page load. So that caching issue doesn't necessarily right. come into effect, because you're AJAX loading every further page. Yeah, or you've already loaded it on the initial one, which might not be good for mobile either. I'd rather see you AJAX them. But yeah, you can kind of get around that. And also, if you're using PhoneGap, which I totally support the use of open web standards, and the Nitobe guys and PhoneGap and LaRue and all those guys are awesome. You can actually embed JQ Touch and jQuery and all that stuff directly into your application, and you don't even have to download it from the internet. So there is actually a way that you can really, really use jQuery on mobile, and it's really not a big deal. But in the case that you need to get some JavaScript done, on an average case, you could probably write the WebKit-specific jQuery either with XUI.js, which is also kind of a Brian LaRue, Nitobe type project.
Awesome.
Yeah. Really, really great. But even then, that's not even necessarily entirely needed, because chances are you need a document ready function and an href update, or a return false on a event handler or something. It's really simple that you don't need a library for, especially when there's no browser compatibility issues.
Right. Yeah.
So hang on. As in, like, a noob here who hasn't done any mobile development, when you say that it doesn't, that you can be targeting WebKit only, and you're relying on doing things like AJAX requests, I take it that you're not taking into account, IE, dinosaur version, and so on and so forth. Is that just pretty much the case in the mobile dev community these days?
Yeah, Slex has done some work with mobile applications that have had to work across browsers. The work that I've done, we've really been just targeting WebKit browsers because, truth be told, they own the vast majority of the market share. And in the case of the app I've been working on, they're in the demographic. But, Slex, you can talk about the work that you've done trying to support IE4 or not.
Yeah, your stat is a little weird, because WebKit by far is not the most popular browser. However, of people who actually use
of people who actually use yeah. them. Yes,
yeah, who have data plans and who actually are trying to use the internet on their phone. They actually do make up quite a larger version. The issue that we had at my recent project that I worked on is that a lot of our business clients needed to use this application. They're all on old BlackBerry-type applications or old Windows mobile phones. And so all this stuff, we pretty much found that just progressively enhance your site with XUI or jQuery, and then make it work naturally without JavaScript, and then increase the functionality in the UI of the site with your JavaScript engine after that. And even then, it can get a little tricky. Just positioning elements in the old IE browsers is ridiculously difficult. Tables don't even line up how you think they would in a line. So you can't even fall back to a table layout.
Well, and in that sort of scenario, you're not even, like, jQuery is not even in the mix.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, you can't. Yeah, jQuery's not in the mix. It's not even the topic of this anymore. But you pretty much gotta go straight HTML, and you know, make sure your CSS isn't even doing too much of the work, right? So
awesome.
Paul, if you would, we'll move on. I think we've talked enough about how bad the mobile aspect of things is outside of WebKit. Speaking of bad things and being in jQuery chat, I think we're going to have a segment called Paul's. Actually, AJ, could you write this down? It's Paul's Weekly Anti-Pattern for Performance in jQuery of the Week Performance.
Yeah. Anti-Pattern.
Going to try to make that longer each week. Because it in itself is an anti-pattern for performance.
Certainly. So let's give a shout out to anti-patterns. Anti-patterns are basically typical ways that you might develop that is not probably the best way to be developing, either from a performance standpoint, a maintainability standpoint, a other people understanding what the hell you're doing kind of thing. So. The anti-pattern that I want to cover right now is using the CSS method to set values. So I'm basically saying, I don't think that you should be using the CSS method and saying, I want to set the background position to this value.
Why so. Not, you hater? Explain this to me.
So basically, what I think basically is that you know, JavaScript is your interaction, HTML is your semantics and your markup, and CSS is your presentation layer. So, the proper way, in my opinion, is really to add and remove classes to your DOM from your JavaScript layer, and let the CSS take over after that. Whether it's adding, changing the background position for like a CSS sprite, or changing the functionality, but I really think that having your DOM kind of like represent the state of your app and letting your CSS handle the styling behind it is really the most performant way to go, and also the most maintainable.
I'll rebut today's anti-pattern. I recently, as of this morning, written an application that uses the CSS function, and I'm shocked and appalled that you would call it an anti-pattern.
It is.
However, in this application, I had to dynamically get the position of an element and then set the position of this new element relative to that. Is that a case to where CSS might be useful? Because I can't create a CSS file that has this dynamic position, you know, based on my mouse, or based on another element that's been dragged or anything like that, I have to set that directly in the CSS object.
Totally. I understand that, yeah. That use case is basically, yeah, when you have a dynamic value that you certainly can't calculate, it's dependent on the DOM or the content, you're creating some like random color or user-inputted color, it certainly makes sense to use this. I'm merely pointing this out as when you know beforehand what the value will be, that value should be in your CSS files and not in your JavaScript files.
Yeah, the bottom line is, if you can do it with CSS, do it with CSS. If you need JavaScript, do it with JavaScript.
Worth mentioning, though, if you are keeping your eye on the jQuery UI project, they have a really nifty plugin called Position, which you can grab an alpha version of now. But it's designed to allow you to position anything relative to anything really easy. The syntax is basically designed to be like, position my left to the middle of this other div. I haven't had a chance to play with it yet, but the API seems really awesome, and I know people who are using it, and they're very satisfied. So that's not available just yet, finally, but it's a pretty nifty thing coming out of the world of jQuery UI.
Yeah, I saw Scott Gonzalez demo that at a little event we had, and like eyes lit up around the room. It's a pretty awesome demo to see.
All right, so next I kind of wanted to bring up kind of a coding style thing. And so this is basically, there's somewhat been an emerging pattern of when you're declaring a variable that represents a jQuery object or a jQuery collection, to prefix the name of that variable with the dollar sign. So you do something like var dollar boxes equals dollar div dot box. And that would kind of indicate to you that this is a jQuery collection rather than some other sort of variable. So, I mean, does this make sense to you guys?
Yeah, like so a lot of times I'll see in a lot of programs the this the context object, right? You'll have this naturally, and then if you want to cache the version of this around the jQuery object, like on a click handler or something like that, you use this a lot. So you'll cache that as dollar this equals the actual cache version of the jQuery object. I personally like it. I think that it's nice. I use it myself. But I do understand. Does anyone dislike this? I know I've heard the haters. I can argue their point.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people, they see this, and especially if they're coming from PHP, they think that this dollar sign has some special meaning or has some special value, or does it has some magic contained on it. And when I'm like, when I'm teaching classes to people who are teaching people about jQuery, I make a point to explain to them, this is why I'm prefixing this with a dollar sign. It's not special. It's just a convention, and it helps you know. And you know, and I find that more and more I don't necessarily write my code using those dollar signs, because you they're not necessary, but they are really helpful in helping people understand when something is a jQuery object and when it's just a normal variable.
Yeah, we call this Hungarian notation. This is Hungarian.
Wow.
I've never thought this would come in useful until right now.
But Hungarian currency, for real.
The thing that I've, the argument that I like against using the dollar sign as a prefix is that a lot of times you'll see people prefix their variables with like str, string name, you know, like sure. STR name, STR last name, things like that. And I'm not a huge fan of, you know, trying to implement this faux static typing in JavaScript. However, I think the difference, you know, and it could be said that, you know, adding the dollar sign is the same thing as putting like JQ as a prefix for anything. So what's the difference of adding a dollar sign? I think that the difference is really clear in the case of this and dollar sign this, and that like the dollar sign this is like a super version of the original object. So you're actually extending almost a DOM element in most cases in jQuery, right? So it's actually like you have this extra functionality on top of this DOM element. So you could consider the dollar sign short for super.
And of course,
it's a super variable. But Adam, I was going to ask, like, what's the deal with Hungarian? Like I hear this Hungarian notation, but I honestly don't even know what it means. So, like, what does it mean when you say Hungarian notation? How does that, like, relate to this?
According to noted website Wikipedia, Hungarian notation is a naming convention in computer programming in which the name of a variable indicates its type or intended use. Mm. So we basically had the argument here right now by proxy. It's just, you know, like Alex said, string, whatever, A, whatever, O, whatever, to denote what kind of type it is. I think this argument is one of those, like, you know, what's your favorite text editor that can be had over and over and is had over and over every single day on the internet. What's really important and informs this entire discussion is that you are caching your jQuery collections and your jQuery objects. If you're not doing that, if you're not doing var something equals a jQuery selection, or even if it's the case of this, it doesn't seem like it takes that much more time to create another jQuery over and over and over again. But my approach to dry is if you can, if you don't need to repeat it, don't do it. So cache it. Cache it!
Cache that. For sure. All right. Rock and roll. So I think we can wrap up here. But I wanted to give a quick shout to a call that we currently have going on, which is basically John Rezig has asked for anyone to kind of, if you have any bugs that are outstanding that have not been fixed and you really want to see make it into jQuery 1.4, there's a form to fill out. You can hit up the bug tracker if it hasn't been filed yet. But they're trying to close the scope on what's going to make it into 1.4. So any feature requests or any edge cases that you've seen that you really want to make it in. I know that there's some, like, cross-origin XHR stuff and a lot of other things. Definitely the new event types going into live will hopefully be seen. But definitely get in on that. And I guess we can call this a wrap. We'll hopefully be bringing you another episode of this soon enough. I'd like to talk about some more things about plugin authoring, creating unit testable plugins, and the preferred text editors and IDEs for writing your JavaScript and jQuery, things like that. So if you have any feedback or are looking for us to cover anything else, please certainly let us know.
One other thing, if you want to, you can follow us on Twitter at YayQuery. That's us on Twitter, so come say hi.
Definitely. So thank you for joining us, and I suppose we'll leave you with Jonathan Neal's theme song to the jQuery SwiftObject plugin. So for your listening pleasure.
I like SwiftObject, now I'm on a roll. I got this IE6 is in control. There'll be no crashing, I don't need a hack. This script will even work inside a Mac. You fools don't need to know about a bed. All you gotta do is write a line inside the head. Provide flash document inside jQuery argument and jQuery DOM selections. Got anchor tags and jQuery on those children. Reveals a span and search for what it's containing. And if there is a Swift inside that text it matched, then that's the flash you will attach. Cause I like SwiftObject, so I made a port. It's in my teeth, so we stay out of court. All you gotta do is say what you want to. All the rest will be figured out for you. Yeah, we don't need to know all about a bed. All we gotta do is write a line inside the head. Provide flash document inside jQuery argument and jQuery DOM selections. Got anchor tags and jQuery for the children. Reveals a span and search what it is containing. And you will find the Swift thing you want it to mean. It's flash before the page is seen.
It's flash.
Ah, jQuery Swift.